Blog Talk Radio.
I'm showing black love to you, but if you tripping, then that's just on you. Do something different, we living in so much hate. Bro, what's up with you? Hey, after you pop that nigga, ask yourself what did you accomplish, nigga? All that betrayal from your partners, you still rocking with them. You turned yourself into a killer when you was way too little. The homies claiming they on demon time and I don't feel them. I was that nigga, I know the feeling, I know the riddle. Sometimes you gotta draw the line before you draw the pistol. I'm cutting niggas off, don't want no pissing match with you. They act like they don't feel it when you speak on black issues. They killed Nip, they killed Vaughn, we don't know who killed who. This shit ain't entertaining to me, how is it to you? They hella mad cause I wear black instead of red or blue. The type to speak on real shit, some people hate the truth. I got a black mother with black brothers, I cannot lose. We got the tools to make it do whatever we gotta do. I know you killer, but killer, you only killing you. Kill all that old energy, I'm showing black love to you. Kill all that old energy, I'm showing black love to you. And we can do this, Brody, cause I fuck with you. Back to back, we gon' have a blast and get this cash up. And if you black, you ain't gotta be mad, cause we already won. Yeah, cause it's a blessing, we gon' be fine. And every time we show up, they take pictures cause we so fly. Do something different, it's so much hate. So when we come together, we gon' rep this black love game. I lost my brother, my mother cried too. I watched his wife remarry and he's a cool dude. I ain't gon' hate none, I just got my weight up. We in the building, you know it's time to pay us. Lost love in the streets where I came up. I'm from out north and it ain't never been safer. Black queen on her shit, ain't gotta save her. Everything ain't legit, she's not a waiter. I got some shit on my mind and I'ma stay here. We all got babies to raise, so niggas take care. We top, I'ma pop into my Sabatier here. I'm on the block with some knockers who make the papers. We gotta fight to keep living and this shit ain't fair. If you ain't trying to come with us, you gotta later. We gon' do this shit real big, we big stunners. We gon' put a smile on your face, it's all love her. Remember, we kings came from nothing. We struggled, the ghetto taught us to hustle. I dream to see real niggas united. We bang on the opps if they don't like it. Kill all that old energy, I'm showing black love to you. And we can do this, Brody, cause I fuck with you. Back to back, we gon' have a blast and get this cash up. And if you black, you ain't gotta be mad, cause we already won. Yeah, cause it's a blessing, we gon' be fine. And every time we show up, they take pictures cause we so fly. Do something different, it's so much hate. So when we come together, we gon' rep this black love game.
Hey, whoa, it's the vino in this jungle, oh, warrior music, oh.
Me wake up from a dream, couldn't go back to sleep. Me sit up and a prayer situation now comes. And me always dead to see them, but me not see them in a my tribulation. Oh, it's so funny that the people them would tell yourself to trust them. You never ever get them when you call them. I just you and the problem in this jungle,
jungle.
Every man feed themselves so prepared for fight. Hey, give thanks to the one for true to life.
Jungle,
jungle. The victory's there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. Me get a flat down the road through me car overload. Me have the spear and my phone battery empty. Maybe to me raga raga me sure never press. People drive past now help me. And the ones who pretend to care, them just all about the money, yeah. Here comes the cops who want to ticket me. Ain't nothing but this, no funny.
In this jungle,
every man see themselves so prepared for fight.
it real. In this jungle,
I never ever want to see
many true characters concealed. Flattering lips with smiling faces, pass them all the while in different places. In this jungle, everyone seems to ever need an agenda. Hey, so why you hunting for mine? Now go on like some blind. In this jungle, every man see themselves so prepared for fight. Jungle,
jungle,
hey, give thanks to the ones for true to life. Jungle,
jungle,
the victory's there, there on the battlefield. Real warriors keep it real. In this jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle, 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 jungle. Jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle, this jungle.
Me wake up from a dream, couldn't go back to sleep. Me sit up and I pray a situation now comes. And me always dead for them, but me no see them in my tribulation.
Oh, it's so funny that the people them would tell yourself to trust them. You never ever get them when you call them.
I just you and the problem. Problem.
In this jungle,
jungle,
every man feed themselves up prepared for fight. Jungle,
jungle,
hey, give thanks to the ones for true to life. Jungle,
jungle,
the victory's there, there on the battlefield.
Real warriors keep it real.
In this jungle,
jungle,
every man feed themselves up prepared for fight. Jungle,
jungle,
hey, give thanks to the ones for true to life. Jungle,
jungle,
the victory's there, there on the battlefield.
Real warriors keep it real.
In this jungle, 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 jungle. In this jungle, 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 jungle.
Babylon, you know it won't be long. Whoa, and we'll be going. I got to explain to you also your soul, your needs, your political desires and needs, because that is Huey's soul. When we first organized the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, he would say, Bobby, he says, we're going to draw up a basic platform, just basic, that black people can read. He says, we don't want to go real elaborate with all these essays and dissertations and all this stuff, because the brother going to look at that and he can say, man, I ain't got time for that. I got to go see what I can do for myself. He says, just a basic platform that the mothers who struggle hard to raise us, that the fathers who worked hard, that the young brothers in school who come out of school semi-illiterate. You say, we want freedom, we want power to determine the destiny of our black community. Full employment for our people. Number three, we want housing fit, decent housing fit for shelter of human beings. Number four, we want all black men to be exempt from military service. Number five, we want decent education for our black people in our community that teaches us the true nature of this decadent racist society, and to teach black people and our young black brothers and sisters their place in society, because if they don't know their place in society and in the world, they can't relate to anything else. Number six, we want an end to the robbery by the white racist businessmen of black people and black people in their communities. Number seven, we want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. Number eight, we want all black men held in county, state, federal jails and prisons to be released because they have not had a fair trial, because they've been tried by all white juries, and that's just like being tried in Germany being a Jew. We want black people, number nine, when brought to trial, to be tried by members of their peers. And a peer being one who comes from the same economic, social, religious, historical, and racial background. If the United States government and the courts and the local courts did this, they would have to choose black people from the black community to sit up on the jury. They'd have to choose some of their mothers who've been working 20 years in Miss Ann's kitchen scrubbing floors like my mother done. They have to choose some of them hard-working fathers. They have to choose some of those brothers who stand on the block out there wondering where they're going to get a gig. They're going to have to choose these black people. And number 10, he would say, let's just summarize it. We want housing, we want clothing, we want education, we want justice, and we want peace. This is a basic platform. In case you never knew it or not, of all the things that you've heard in the press, of all the derogatory statements that's been made in the press about Brother Huey P. Newton and I, of all these derogatory statements to guide you away from seeing this basic platform that Huey was talking about for his own people. We have to learn to look through the white press. We have to learn to see what's going on. Now, out of this platform, Huey P. Newton realized that it was necessary for us to start working on these points, these 10 points, practically. Remember number seven? We want an immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. This is very, very important. And here, whether you know it or not, is where you start dealing with the black revolution. When Huey says, every black man put a shotgun in your home, and once we let the man know, say, look, we armed from block to block, and we're going to patrol you from our windows. And we're not going to have you brutalizing none of our people in the streets. Do you realize what kind of power black people have then? Because you begin to neutralize that police force, because them cops are going to start riding shaky and scared. In fact, we're in a position then to demand that they withdraw from our community because they occupy our community just like a foreign troop occupies territory. Very important to understand. We hate cops beating black people over their heads and murdering them. That's what we hate. If you got enough energy to sit down and hate a white person just because of the color of his skin, you wasted a lot of energy. You better take that same energy and put it in some motion out there and start dealing with those oppressive conditions, and you're going to find out just what you hate and what you're going to stop. Black people, we are organizing to stop racism. You dig it? When you stop racism, you stop brutality and murder of black people by the racist occupying army in our black community. That's what we're going to stop. What's being done to us? You dig it? Can you dig the white power structure and this racist police force and how they've escalated the situation? That before Watts, there was 1,300 cops. Now there's 6,000 cops patrolling black people. That in Oakland, they had 350 cops. Just 3.5 years ago, now they got 1,000 cops patrolling black people. San Francisco's double its police force, and every area, major metropolis where black people live all across this country, they've doubled, tripled, and quadrupled their police force, equipped them with tanks, all kinds. We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Now turn to our program for the future.
Economy right now, it's extremely supporting of the president and his policies.
FBI scientists have found chemical traces consistent with a bomb or a missile on a piece of wreckage. Police using clubs and tear gas against demonstrators.
So and a white fascist. Like they said, you're getting some of your own medicine.
Right one, then the rest will fall behind. tell me who's got control of your mind, your worldview. Is it the news or the movie you taking your girl to? Know what I'm saying, cause Uncle Sam got a plan. If you examine what they telling us, then you will understand what they planting in the seeds of the next generation. Feeding our children miseducation. No one knows if there's UFOs or any life on Mars, or what they doing when they up in the stars. Because I don't believe a word of what the president said. He's filling our heads with lies, got us hypnotized when he be speaking in cold words about crime and poverty, drugs, welfare, prisons, guns and robbery. It really means us, there's no excuse for the slander. But what's good for the group is still good for the gander, see.
I don't believe Bob Marley got me cancer. 31 years ago I would have been a panther. They killed Huey cause they knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news is propaganda. I don't want no computer chip in my arm. I don't wanna die by a nuclear bomb. I say we all rush the Pentagon, pull out guns and grab the intercom. My first words would be, I believe man made God out of ignorance and fear. If God made man, then why the hell would he put us here? I thought he supposed to be the all-loving, the same God who let Hitler put the Jews in the ovens. We don't fall for the regular shit. They try to feed us all this half-ass leadership, different position. They turn politician and shut the hell up and follow tradition. Boy, your TV screen is telling lies to your vision. Every channel got the brainwash cop shit to watch. Running up in niggas' cribs claiming that they earn shots. It's a plot. But Buster, can you tell me who's greedier? The big corporation, the pigs or the media? Sign of the time, terrorism on the rise. Commercial airplane falling out the skies like flies. Make me wonder what secrets went down with Ron Brown, who burned the churches to the ground with no evidence found. It's not coincidence, it's been too many steady incidents. It could have been the Klan who put that bomb at the Olympics, but it probably was the FBI. Deep at the core, cause if they make us all panic, they can start martial law. I don't believe Bob Marley got some cancer. 31 years ago I would have been a panther. They killed Huey cause they knew he had the answer. The views that you see in the news is propaganda. I don't believe Bob Marley got some cancer.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People, weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party, National Chairman Nat Turner, co-host myself, Brother Motherland, and our engineer on the ones and twos, Sister Amina, National Minister of Communication. Calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic. Phone acting crazy. Tonight's topic, a walk through black history, ancient style, part 2. We're going to open up our phone lines to our national chairman, People's Political Party. National Chair, Nat Turner, Black Power, comrade, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yo-hoo, I can hear you loud and clear. Power.
Yeah, right on. You're right, Black Power. Yeah, Black Power, power to the people. We want to continue what we started last week. This is a subject, we chose, just in the sense to show our diversity. In terms of our understanding, when you declare, yourself as a revolutionary organization, the word revolution, it tends to blind people in a sense, or sort of like a stigma, when you think of a revolutionary, people, it's a historical thing that is. Even in the movies in Hollywood, war, bloodshed, and one group opposed to another group, and the overthrow of one group by another group. Historically, it's been, the lesser wealthy people, seeking to, liberate themselves from a more dominant, richer class group or whatever, the American Revolution, has been shopped all around the world or whatever. But when you this image, a lot of times people don't see or would figure a group is talking about, something else other than things pertaining to revolutionary politics. But part of revolutionary politics, when it comes to black people, when we're speaking, the subject is black people, conditions, what have you, the struggle, the history, that part of that revolutionary structure of change is black people learning their history, learning where they come from, it's part of it, part of the revolutionary transformation of our minds. And part of that is understanding who you are as a black man and a black woman, being proud of where you come from, your legacy, your people's history, your people's past. If history wasn't all that important, then we wouldn't need to pass a history class in order to receive a diploma or degree or what have you. It's a required learning. And it's just that certain forces have been in control of what that history is going to be composed of when you're teaching some young people in the class, 20 to 25 students in the classroom, middle school, what have you, high school, on to college or secondary education, or world history. That shit is put together by certain individuals who have been given the green light to structure the book that the student has to go pay when they get in college, And when they talk about world history, it go way back, they have this class about origin of humanity and whatnot, scientific and, so certain forces control that. And so we figured it would be a good piece, to venture off into black history, ancient style, going way back. It is a fact that the further you go back in time when it comes to history, human beings, the further you go back, the blacker it gets. So last week, I got into a sort of a anthropological thing, an anthropology, dealing with human remains and skeletons and skulls that have been found, dug, unearthed or whatever, the science of archaeology where they go digging up shit around the world and whatnot, And so we talked about what is known today as Europe expose some things, ancient skeletons, human remains that this sort of technique to date, these remains, and we're told through this process, 200,000, 300,000, year old human skeletons or whatever, And so that was something we started wanting to, sort of like by geographical place, like Europe, what is called Europe, like I said, anciently before Europe, we spoke about just being simply Western Asia, a part of the great Asian landmass and stuff, and how Europe got to be called Europe from a black goddess. In storytelling and mythology, the average child in this country, has been taught that, storytelling and stuff. And so for some reason, Greek mythology appears to be the most widely known mythology. And of course, that's due to white world supremacy. And so we want to sort of pick up there when it comes to that and when we talk about who Europa was. Now, these historic, these storytellers, these mythographers, these persons who had these incredible imaginations to put characters together, and some of these Greek mythology, these Greek stories have been turned into big blockbuster movies. One of the earliest movies, character from so-called Greek mythology was Hercules. You know, I remember that, you know, back in the 70s, you know, being a boy in this society. And, you know, Hercules, of course, you know, was a white man with the muscles and whatnot. There's one particular Hercules, one of the earliest ones who played Hercules, named Lou Ferrigno. This is also the same man that played the Incredible Hulk, from Marvel Comics and stuff. He was one of the earliest that I remember. So all the characters, of course, of white Greek mythology, you know, you think about that, Greece, white people, whatnot. But there's a whole nother side. There's a whole nother hidden side to Greek mythology that these Greek, they're referred to as classic scholars, you know, teaching the classics, Greek classics and stuff. And they take this shit very serious in the college, in the academic world, defending or teaching the Greek thought, the Greek view of the world and so forth, which has been termed Greek philosophy, which is the bedrock of so-called Western civilization, Western society, America, Western Europe, in particularly, you know, Britain, the British Empire. Then, you know, you have the Romans, and then going back to the Greeks and whatnot. So this line of white world history, which has been projected onto the rest of the world. So talked about that, you know, some of the ancient skeletons found in places of Europe, what is now Europe, France, Spain, Russia, you know, and some other places. These skull shapes and structures, particular type of features, which give these ancient people away as being black people, non-whites, and sort of toward of evolutionary metamorphosis, so to speak, in the changing of skull structure or whatnot, you know. These were ancient black people that left out of Africa. These countries that you see today in North Africa, like Morocco, Algeria, Libya, Mauritania, you know, these countries, the northernmost part of the continent, which is separated from Europe by the Mediterranean Sea, so to speak. To the left, northwest, there, you know, this once connecting land bridge, you know, just to give an idea of the migration out of Africa, you know. So that's those times, sort of touched on what they refer to as West Asia. What I want to do tonight is sort of connect the dots to come down to more structures, architecture, what have you, know, digging up ancient cities and towns or whatnot, you know. There's this a story about the legend of Troy, the Trojan War. The movie Troy was made in recent years, starring Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt is the star of the show. His character name is Achilles. Some of you may be familiar with the football injury. When they say a football player tore his Achilles heel, his Achilles. So that's down in the heel. This is because when Achilles was finally, he had been struck, you know, with a lethal blow in the heel, you know, in the story. And so this is where that thing Achilles heel comes from in football, which is season-ending injury,
right?
And let me say this too before, you know, getting there. We also touched on what is referred to as the Minoan civilization, the Cretan civilization, the island of Crete. Monuments, structures, what have you, things that were found is like, you know, over 4,000 years old, you know, way before so-called the Greeks, you know, over 1,000 years, you know, before the Greeks of so-called history. You know, the famous cities that people like to go visit if they're, you know, wealthy enough, or, you know, people who can afford these, you know, these trips to go visit ancient ruins and monuments of Greece, you know, to go see the ancient city of Athens and Sparta, you know, these cities that have been made famous, you know, Rome, you know, the Colosseum, you know, these places, you know. So that was the Minoan civilization. Minoan civilization was a civilization that was created, founded, built by Ethiopian people. Today in Ethiopia, you can see similar porches of physical beings that were found on these walls and some of these paintings, extraordinary paintings. The Minoans had captured their sailors on the seas, you know, sailing in these ships or what have you, you know, dark brown persons with black curly hair, you know. In some instances, you know, you would see one with the little boys, or I think the youth of fishing. And you see one where the young man, hey, wears the loincloth, you know, and he has, you know, would, you know, be taken as a small throw, you know. These are the type of artwork that when they do these displays and these art displays and charge you, you know, to get in and see the ancient Minoan whatever artifacts and stuff. These not necessarily ones that they'll put out on Front Street. You know, these are the ones a lot of times that are kept in the back. The same that they do with the so-called Egyptian artifacts and stuff, you know. You know, paintings, sculptures and stuff, you know. So that's the Minoan civilization. I mean, yeah, the Minoan civilization, the island of Crete, which is out in the you know, the Mediterranean Sea area. You know, there's another sea there, you know, but keep with the Mediterranean. Then you have the Mycenaean so-called civilization with mainland Greece, which would be southern Europe. That was the crossover when the so-called whites had begun to come around to civilization and so forth. But when you come to Greeks, Greek civilization, there's, like I said, the legend of Troy. And I wanted to, you know, just kind of focus on this. You know, we believe that our youth deserve this type of teaching. We believe that our youth deserve to be taught and told this part of black history, ancient black history. That the most staunchest white classic scholars, Greek so-called scholars, will be up in arms over, but we could care less. The facts are the facts. Facts don't compromise no one. We understand that these psychological factors, these issues that the Europeans have had since, you know, they've been in contact with black and brown people all over this earth. And so the legend of Troy, this had been a legend, you know, the famous city of Troy. And there was this scholar, this white scholar in the 19th century, mid, late 19th century, like the 1860s, 70s and whatnot. He had this, what was really like an obsession. You know, he had read these Greek writers' stories and, you know, about Troy, and he had said, you know, that there was this war referred to as the Trojan War. You know, one king was come under attack. You know, Troy had come under attack. And so they had to defend the city of Troy. You know, it was this walled city, you know. And so they would give this time frame that when the Trojan War had taken place, which would have been about 3,000 years ago, you know. There's, you know, Bible enthusiasts, you know, they use this, you know, what would be considered as 1,000 B.C., you know, before Christ. We just say 3,000 years ago, you know, in ancient times. But somewhere around there, and this scholar, I believe he was a German, and his name was Heinrich Schliemann, you know, Henry Schliemann, in other words. And, you know, he like I said, developed this obsession. And so he had actually read, you know, the story, and you know, they would give these names, these places, these regions. And so he actually filed, you know, the story like it was a map, like it was a road map. You know, he did the coordinates where as the person was describing it. And so he began digging. You know, he began digging in his area. And, you know, they say the fruits of your labors, you know. And lo and behold, he'd actually came upon some ancient ruins, you know. This would be what you would call today somewhere around Turkey or West Turkey, going over into what is now to Europe, you know. Some of us don't realize that you can, well, the last I know, that you can walk out of West Asia and into Eastern Europe, you know. And so there's this area. And so Schliemann, you know, he dug and he dug and he dug. And, you know, now they realize that what he's done, he unearthed a city that went back in this similar area that was older than the legend. These ruins or artifacts we found that extended back to about 5,000 years, you know. And so this is how this person had made a name for himself, become famous in the 19th century during his time. And, you know, he had published some books, he had published his finest, you know, new books and whatnot, and was able to, he created a domino effect. And then there were other archaeologists who came digging after him and improved upon his work. And, you know, they went digging and, you know, and found more and more and more. But he had really busted open. And so there really was a place called Troy, you know. And so he had verified the story, you know. And the interesting part about that is when you get around to the anthropology, if there's been any like skeletal remains left, skulls or what have you, none of that has anything to do with European people, you know, contrary to what they would have you believe. Even the culture is juxtaposed to the typical Greek or European culture. You know, they'll find some things that would relate to what is referred to as Eastern people, you know, people from the East. This is no more than just euphemism for non-whites, you know, black and brown people, you know. And so Troy was a real place. And the legend of Troy, the Trojan War, is where it really gets interesting. there was a king, Priam, P-R-I-A-M, and it come under attack. And in the story, he had relatives, okay, and he had sent word to a king named Memnon, M-E-M-N-O-N, if you want to look that up. And this Memnon is described as an Ethiopian ruler or king of the Ethiopians. Okay. And so it is said that Memnon had went in defense of, King Priam. And he had a combined army of Ethiopians and some Ethiopians from Elam. There's a place called Elam. And this is a real place. Today is located in what we know, to give you ideas, of Iran. And this is a place named Elam. For those of you familiar with the Table of Nations in Genesis, the 10th chapter, and when they speak about the children of Ham, the children of Shem, the children of Japhet, right? The three sons of Noah. Shem, one of the sons of Noah, had a son, his oldest son, as a matter of fact. Now, his oldest son is named Elam in the Bible. If you want to find it or look. So Elam, the country, the civilization, the Elamites, were real people. And so the Bible writer of Genesis had placed Elam as the son of Shem. Now, there's artifacts as clear as night is from day. They found artifacts date back 6,000 years old. 7,000 years old in this ancient place, kingdom called Elam. So the writer of the Trojan War, Troy story, was aware of these ancient peoples, that lived in Elam. And Memnon is said to led an army to go and help defend Troy with King Priam in the story, all right? And Memnon is described as an Ethiopian king or ruler of the Ethiopians. Okay. Now, they were trying to figure out which Ethiopia that the writer was talking about. There was more than one Ethiopia back then. And this is what our young people need to know, So we're busting the lid off, so to speak. So he takes a huge army of thousands to go and pretty much rescue King Priam in the story. Now, it says that Memnon, his parents, Memnon was an Ethiopian king, and of course his mother and his father were Ethiopians themselves, okay. And Priam, I believe in the story, was his brother. Okay, so he goes to, help defend Troy. There's this other person, or they were cousins or something like that, but there's this other king, Laomedon, something like Laomedon, who was a father of, I think, Priam in the story, right? So what I'm saying is that Priam and Memnon were related by blood. So what the writer is saying about Troy is that the people that ruled Troy, the famous Troy, were black. They were black. And when he had gotten attacked, by the Trojans, they, you know, sent word out, and Memnon goes to help defend Troy. Now, when Hollywood made Troy, and they put Brad Pitt to star in the movie, and the reason why it's called the Trojan War, the story goes that they had made this huge horse, you know, this huge wooden horse on wheels, and, you know, they, you know, the horse was pushed up, you know, on location, and, you know, they saw this horse, and what they hid in the horse. And this is why these things just got this, it's a Trojan horse. You know, don't fall for it. It's a Trojan horse. That was the trick that they used. That's why it's called the Trojan War. Right? The Trojans, that's what they did. Okay? And so that's how they attacked Troy. Now, when Hollywood made the movie, they left that out. You wouldn't know that Memnon existed, and you damn sure wouldn't gonna know no Ethiopians was there fighting. And this was like 20,000 Ethiopians that had come from Iran, Elam, which was once called Ethiopia. There was Ethiopia in Africa, and Ethiopia, more than one Ethiopia in Asia. Right? And this Ethiopia that was in ancient Africa is not the same one, according when you talk about when the Greeks were talking about Ethiopia. This Ethiopia was geographically the southern half of Kemet and the northern half of Sudan. In other words, Kemet's southern neighbor border country is Sudan. And so the southern half of Kemet and the northern half of Sudan was once called Ethiopia. Okay? And they were confused. There was this debate between these scholars. And they were trying to figure out which Memnon or which Ethiopia that Memnon had came from. This debate probably still raging today. And so some said that, well, since they mentioned Ethiopia, then this Memnon had to come from Northeast Africa. But they were saying that Memnon ruled in Elam. So they were confused. They couldn't figure it out, you know. So these are the black people that went to defend ancient black civilization, an ancient black kingdom called Troy, in the so-called European sphere of the world. If there's 10, let's say, academic scholars, what have you, we probably know that there's one, at least one of these white scholars is honest enough to say this, admit this. There's a book written by Martin Burnell, and he titled the book Black Athena. And when the book came out and was published, he came under vicious attack. He was attacked, sort of like we would say, some black dude who's a sellout, they attacked him. They tried to, discredit his work, his research, but, it's a volume one, volume two, and I think it's a volume three. So combined, his whole work is probably about 2,000 pages of, research and chapters and sections and stuff like that. And so he mentions in volume two the Elamites. And he mentions these ancient people in his book. There's a description. Some of us, want to have a Persian rug in our house, but named after a place called Persia, right? This Persia It was just a more ancient name for the Greeks that was today, that is today Iran today. So it was once known as Persia, you know. And of course, you know, this Greek mythology mentions these, you know, persons who in the Greek mythology, Medea and Perseus, and how he got the name and whatnot, you know. But in the 19th century, around the same time or contemporary with this guy who's in went looking for Troy, he was French, I believe, and he set out to go to Iran, you know, and you know, with archaeologists and whatnot. He came upon this wall, you know, and you know, he had to, you know, move a lot of dirt and sand and whatnot, you know, to clear the wall and to see these figures that were carved and then into the you know, the stone wall, you know, and then they were colored, you know, they were given these colors and stuff like that, you know. And so when he had, you know, cleared the, you know, like the feet, you know, the legs, he had noticed that he was looking at a leg, you know, and they were wearing these particular type of moccasins or sandals or something, or some type of footwear, right? And they wore these long robes, these long type of, you know, would be similar to like robes, like, and they were archers. You know, archers in my, you know, a marksman and the bow and arrow. So come to find that these were, you know, the bow and arrow wing of the Persian army. And so this French scholar, he was amazed to see that the complexions on these persons were dark brown, like the equivalent of a Hershey's chocolate bar. And I'm not making this up. I'm not making this up. No. So, yeah, you know, he was French, so his book was published in French. And, you know, when the English translation of some of his work or some of his, you know, the key points in his book, that was some of the stuff that had gotten translated into English. And so he had said that, you know, hearing about the legend of Memnon and Ethiopians, he was familiar with the story. And so he said that those walls had verified the story. He said that there were dark-skinned troops or warriors who were the bow and arrow. And these were the guards. And he said that he had come upon monuments that had literally verified the black Ethiopian Elamites, you know, who had been mentioned in the story. And they couldn't refute it, you know, like, you know, somebody go there with some bleach, you know, and try to wash away the, you know, the dark skin complexion that these persons would get, you know. So that was his way in the late 19th century. You know, it got around, you know. And so this is the type of history that's not going to be taught to our children, you know. And so when you go back and you look at Memnon's family tree, it gets even more interesting, you know. Memnon was an Ethiopian. His mother and father was an Ethiopian. You know, these names, symbolical names and stuff, you know. And his family tree leads back to Africa, to North Africa, okay? Relatives, I spoke about Europa, All of this leads back to Northeast Africa. You know, the first mother and father. You know, what the Greeks talk about had been Libya and Poseidon. You know, some of you may remember this movie called Poseidon, with sort of like the Titanic, the shipwreck. You know, but you know, as always in African history and culture, the woman's place is pretty much as equal as the man. So you had Libya and Poseidon, and they had children. Now, Libya would appear to be the woman. And so the whole family tree, when you look at it, I mentioned about Cain being one of the sons of Ham in the Bible, and how Europa is a descendant, and how she was kidnapped and taken west. And now you have the continent of Europe from Europa. The Phoenicians, these are black people. The today what is referred to as the Hebrews or the Israelites of the Bible, as of late there's been a group referring to themselves as the Hebrew Israelites, the original Hebrew Israelites are black. this whole history has an amazing origin. Some of it's astronomical. Our ancestors were geniuses. Still to this day, you know, the so-called smartest people are still baffled and still do not even understand some of the astronomical records or conclusions that were reached by black people 8, 6, 10,000 years ago, and how they were able to see in these stars, these formations, and get abstract images out of them. And so from that, they created stories, which is now known as mythology. And these mythologies, each one of these myths has a moral, and this is part of their psyche in terms of maintaining some type of righteousness towards one another. And if not, this is what will happen. And if this happens, this will bring about the destruction of civilization. And of course, the last time we checked, and the word civilization was C-I-V-I-L, the word civil, you can be civil or uncivil. And so not only had our ancestors built these fabulous monuments, temples, and did these incredible sculptures and paintings, you know, the Europeans have it twisted. They're under the impression that this is civilization. No, those are the perks of civilization. And so this is why these mythological stories were formed and created and made. And some of these place names and stuff were actual names. They were given these names due to the relationship with the land, or what these particular regions had meant to them. You know, these names that were given to some of these regions. And these are places, you know, in, like I said, what is today West Asia, okay? And this is what it is. So the word Canaan, place name, which covered pretty much, you know, like from Syria to Palestine. And this in the Bible is now called Canaan. And the ancient Canaanite people were just a branch of the black people who migrated out of Africa and had always been in that part of the world. And as I spoke about this particular facial structure, this protruding, outward protrusion of the jaw, known as prognathism, which is a Greek, German, these terms that they use to describe, you know, your skeletal characteristics or your skull shape. Of course, you go and want to become an anthropologist or whatever, an anatomist. So you have to learn all these German terms, you know, descriptions of the skull and these particular type of characteristics that they have found to be skeletons in that part of the world were irrefutable, incontestable. Specifically because of this, type of trait that is pretty much exclusive to black people. Now, the ones that were not, they saw the opportunity to trick you into thinking that, well, yeah, those were Negroes, but these were not, and these were the Caucasians. So they had to make up these terms. They had to make up these lies or use some nondescript term like Semite, And, of course, that word now is becoming more famous, of course, with the word anti in front of it. Kyrie Irving declared an anti-Semite, anti-Semitic. And we will get into that. But these Semite people, the word Semite derived from Shem's name. This was a so-called European scholar in the 18th century that first coined the term and yet taking that term and been using it ever since. When you say Semite, you have no idea of what that looks like. And so this is why these scholars who specialize in so-called Middle Eastern studies just stick to the word Semite. They try as much as they can to stay away from any physical descriptions of what a Semite really looks like, you see, because that would expose the word Semite as being hijacked by the people today that we usually hear about when you say anti-Semite or anti-Semitic. And these are the white Jews who are now presented as the poster children of the biblical Jews. And this is what, the Hebrew Israelite brothers are exposing. And so this is pretty much based on archaeology, anthropology, and biblical scholarship. But in the Table of Nations, these Semites is very clear. And it's amazing how, you can get people to believe something and the real facts will be right in front of them. It's old saying. And I know a lot of times, we can be sensitive over the word nigger. We see the word nigger as a political aspect, a political tool, And so coming up, we say, well, if you want to hide something from a nigger, all you got to do is just put it in the book and then put the book in the library, if you want to hide something from a nigger. And so this is, it's appeared to be a sort of truism in a sense, but when you look at the Bible, you take a simple look, you see that the Semites, according to the 10th chapter of Genesis, shows that the Semites were the cousins of the Hamites. They were the same family blood. They were cousins. I'm quite sure we all have cousins on mama and daddy's side, and you can look at your cousin and those that is your black cousin, and so it's no different. If there was a real Ham, if there was a real Shem that ever lived, and we know for a fact that Ham is the father, the ancestor of the people in Africa, And so we know that these are black people. So if Shem is the relative of Ham, right? Shem, Ham, Japheth, brothers, then we know that the Canaanites, the Phoenicians, and the Hamites were cousins. And Elam was the oldest son of Shem. And it is a hands down. It is a no-brainer. When you go and look at the photos, pictures that have been taken by these archaeologists, there's these big, huge, ancient art books, you know, where there's dozens of photos. Some of these scholars, some of these brothers in more modern times over the years, what they did was, you know, they magnified the pictures. and so the Elamite pictures have been magnified. And when you magnify them, you blow them up, you can really see. You can really get a good look of the Elamites. And the Elamites are depicted on what's referred to as the Assyrian monuments. Ancient Assyria is today northern Iraq. Ancient Babylonia is today southern Iraq, the equivalent of southern Iraq. So the Assyrians were very warlike, and they made war on many nations, and they had an empire. They even went into Africa, northern Africa, right? Or with the people to the east of them in Persia and Iran and Elam, they had a war with them and conquered them. And so there was a habit on the part of their sculptors. These are the people who recorded history using art. And so they sculpted these battle scenes. And the Elamites being captured and handcuffed and all this type of stuff. Right? And the artist made no bones about it. He depicted the Elamites as having wide noses and full lips and strongly curled hair that today would be referred to as nappy. The Greeks referred to as woolly. Like if you've seen a lamb or sheep has woolly hair, the curliest of the curly type of hair, you know. And so this is what they depicted the Elamites as blacks, as short stature black people, you know. And so this is the Elamites that Memnon had partially led with other Ethiopians to go and rescue King Priam in the Trojan War. You see? And so there's an ancient black kingdom back then. So the question is, when did the Greeks actually, you know, the white Greeks, the pale Greeks, you know, there were the black Greeks. These were blacks. You know, like I said, you know, Greek is a late term, you know. And so the Greeks of history, how old is it? You know, how old is these ancient monuments in Athens and Corinth, Sparta? It's another one I'm probably missing here, you know. But, you know, Athens is like made like to be the most famous Greek, ancient Greek city. And you go there and you see these monuments, they're, you know, according to B.C., you know, 600 B.C., you know, 500 B.C., 700 B.C., which is a baby compared to this ancient civilization that had been around 3,000-4,000 years before this so-called Greek civilization. And so the people that precipitated Greek civilization were Ethiopian people. The Cretan civilization was an Ethiopian civilization built by 9 white people. These were not white people, period. And there's this legend, these stories where they talk about who were the people that before the Greeks, they had said that the Greeks were these ancient people that lived in Greece, spoke a barbarian language. That is the equivalent of a foreign language that we say today. You know, these foreigners, they spoke They speak French in our country. These foreigners from Germany, they're speaking German in our university. You know, when they said barbarian language, they meant foreign language, right? And so in their own history, annals, when they talk about there were people before Helen, you know, Helen, the Greeks say that that is their foremother, Helen. Okay, Helen, Hellas, and the that was their foreparents, their ancestors. Okay, and so before them, they said that there was another group of people that were living, non-Greeks. They spoke a non-Greek language that were living in Greece, and they referred to them as the Pelasgians. P-E-L-A-S-G-I-A-N-S, Pelasgians, right? And there's this story that Pelasgos was their ancestor. And it says that Pelasgos was created from the black, the black earth. The god equaling black earth is from whence Pelasgos was created, from the black earth. And these are the people who were before the Greeks in what they call Greece today, in mainland Greece and in these islands and stuff. So their whole history, you know, these ancient writers, you know, that lived 200 B.C., 100 B.C., you know, the time you see around that Jesus lived in 20 A.D. after Jesus, stuff like that, right, 100 A.D. And these are many of books, many of these histories, these annals that they kept, these chronicles that they kept and stuff like that, you know. And this is what they said. This is what they said, Pelasgos, and they were non-Greek. And so what they were saying, that these were the original people of these lands. And this is corroborated by these ancient skeletons that were found that had nothing to do with what they refer to as European people today, you know. And so that is Europe, Western Europe, Greater Britain, Scotland, Ireland, you know, this place called Stonehenge. You know, these giant, like, huge blocks of stone vertically set up, you know, vertical rectangle like this, you know, and they were placed around in, like, these series of circles, one inside the other. And there's been this huge infatuation with these stones. And so these stones have a astronomical alignment to them. And what they were doing was they were keeping track of the time. They were keeping track of the seasons, you know, and the formations of stars in the sky at night. And they were placing them down on the earth in like these circular forms, like. And then one circle of stones had X amount of, you know, stones in them, you know. And so there's been this infatuation for probably 100 years. Well, I wouldn't say probably. Well, I know for 100 years, maybe 200 years. And I said when we began the term history and mystery, and it appears to be that whenever European people don't know that it is not them, you know, because they're quick to say Caucasian. You know, they're quick to say Caucasian in a flash. You know, but whenever they know it's not them, they put the tag mystery on it. So Stonehenge has been a mystery for decades. Okay. These other alignments, like in Africa, well, they Sudan. Also this southern half of Kemet, northern half of Sudan was also known as a place called Nubia, the Nubian civilization, right? To the west of that in Sudan, more in the interior, like it wasn't out of the desert today, they found another set of strategically placed stones, like round in a circle, like, right? And it's almost like a sort of like a line of stones is drawn through them, but it's placed on. And the same thing. And these stones are aligned to certain stars in the sky at night. One group of these stars is referred to as Orion. Some of us may have went to the movie, to the theater, and when the movie is coming on, it was produced by Orion Pictures. And when it's coming on, it comes on to show you like the stars, the sky, and then these little stars come onto the screen and you circle around in a circle, and it's an O, and then you see the rest of the word Orion come on to there. Well, there's a group of stars particularly that are represented by seven stars. And so this strategic astronomical alignment using these stones, like in Stonehenge, had the same objective. And this alignment of stones in Sudan is like 10 to 12,000 years old, whereas in Stonehenge, they're like, right? So when you do the comparison that, you see the same type of knowledge, you see? And so we know that those are not white people that line those stars up like that, you know? And it's always, how can you prove? You know, how can you not prove it? So you place the word mystery on. You know, and that's the giveaway with Europeans, you know. There's a place called Easter Island. These huge, giant heads that were carved, they were set up, and they were angling out Pacific in a certain direction. And there were seven of them. And the same number seven keeps popping up around the world. And they placed the word tag mystery on the stone heads of Easter Island. Now, when you look at the history of Easter Island, what do you see? The indigenous people of Easter Island, right, the indigenous black and brown people, these islands out in the Pacific, all the way to Hawaii, Polynesia, Australia, Micronesia, Malaysia, Melanesia. There's a place called Melanesia, right, a series of islands called Melanesia. Now, let me say it again, Melanesia. It's the same as the word melanin. And so they gave that island that name just simply because of the people that was there, the dark-skinned people that was there. And there's also in the Greek story, myth, one known as Melos, the black. You see? And so it's no coincidence that they were naming these regions after the physicality of these people that when they came into contact with them, or they heard about them from other people that traveled there and came across them. You know, these Greek and Roman writers, when they came into contact with dark-skinned people, they referred to them as Ethiopians. All of West Asia pretty much was referred to as Ethiopia. The legend of Andromeda. Perseus and Andromeda. The legend of Andromeda goes that Andromeda was put up as a sacrifice because her mother, Cassiopeia, had sort of made fun of the of these beauty, these beautiful goddesses, so to speak. You know, she had was bragging that she was more beautiful than them. She had offended them. And so they, to appease them, to atone, she had to offer them a sacrifice. So she put up her daughter, Andromeda, the father. I'm trying to get the name out, y'all. It'll come to me. But anyway, her father is referred to as the king of the Ethiopians. He's referred to as the king of the Ethiopians. Cepheus. King Cepheus is referred to as the king of the Ethiopians. And King Cepheus is the daughter, is the father of Andromeda. So if King Cepheus is the king of the Ethiopians, he's an Ethiopian, then who is Andromeda? See? But if you let Hollywood tell the story, when they produced the movie about Andromeda, who did they use? They used the white actress because they will never, never, in a sense, give you that for control purposes. Okay, so they take Andromeda and they call him the king of the Ethiopians, right? Now the story says the story is placed in a, is located in a place called Joppa, J-O-P-P-A, and this Joppa today is around what would be, what is it? Palestine, somewhere up in there, Jordan, Palestine, up against the eastern seaboard of the Mediterranean Sea, Joppa. And he was the king of the Ethiopians. Now, what are they telling you about the people that lived in Joppa? That was Ethiopia. It was another place called ancient Ethiopia there. And his queen, Cassiopeia, and their daughter Andromeda that she put up for a sacrifice. But she was rescued by Perseus. Of course, the monster Cetus was supposed to come out of the sea and devour her. And so Perseus defeats this monster, right? And he unchains her on the edge of the sea, you know? And that is how that story went. So all of these myths and all these stories lead back to black people. And the myths is a moral to the stories. The moral to the stories, Andromeda, is to reveal that the people that lived in Joppa were Ethiopians too. The people that lived in Troy as immortalized in Priam and Memnon were black people, Ethiopians. And this is what these stories meant, you know. It's an array of them. It's an array of them. And then, you know, like I said, you know, I mentioned this French archaeologist when he went and he saw this, you know, these sculptures. And today, you know, there's been many of pictures, many of, you know, things that have been produced when it comes to so-called Iranian archaeology. And so this wall is a phenomenal wall. And you can see that these were the special guards of the Persian king, which, of course, show you how long they had been there and how much, you know, that their history had extended more into recent times. The Persians were 6th century B.C., and that is a baby, you know, King Darius and all these people, right, that have been made famous in some of these places. You know, so he was using black Ethiopian guards, royal guards. And in Iran today, Iran, the country of Iran, the adaptation of the royal guards in Iran is still used today in modern Iran, the royal guards, you know, and from the ancient black Ethiopian population that lived in Iran that had been there, you know, for several hundred thousand years. You know, there may have been some gaps in between. There's been a number of migrations out of Africa, you know, the replenishing of these places. You know, like in the Bible where it says they're told to be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth. You know, I've kind of sort of let the cat out of the bag, you know, with that one. But, you know, be fruitful, multiply, that was, you know, symbolic language, you know, shit, have some children, have some babies, you know, multiply, replenish the earth. This is in Genesis. So the New Living Translation people have had access to reproducing the Bible. What they did was they took out the word replenish, or they took re off of the word plenish, or if they took the word replenish out, they replaced it with the word fill, F-I-L-L. So that changes the complexion of that scripture. You know, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. That would make them look original. But in the old King James, it has replenish. Which means what? Rewind the tape. Let's reenact the murder scene. Can't reenact a murder scene unless the murder scene has been enacted first. you know. But that's on another line. But I just wanted to use that to give an idea, you know, of the original migrations out of Africa as the original place of humanity and civilization all around the world before Europeans come on the scene. And so that is Europe. Moving over into West Asia. No. And let me add this right quick, because I really want to stick it to them, you know, because our children have been so miseducated. And you're seeing the results of that on the streets. Miseducated on purpose in order to get the results that you see on the streets. And that is a population control genocide, which is a strategic plan. It's not a coincidence. It's no conspiracy theories, conspiracy fact. No. But that whole, like I said, the Greek mythology, these islands, there's a story about the 50 daughters and the 50 sons. these daughters and these sons were actually, but the sons and the daughters, you know, had emerged from Africa, and the women fled East Africa to find another place to, you know, live, and so they were sought after, you know. And so they had sailed with their father in these ships. And so in these poems, something about the Odes of Pindar or something like that. This type of shit, you know, they teach in these colleges and stuff, you know, these poems, these plays, and Pindar, Homer, and some other so-called Greek poets. And where they wrote these stories, you know, in poetic form. But when they saw these ships that the men had got on, these boats, in pursuit of the women, they wanted to marry them. And so they were in one of the Greek cities, right, regions that you know, that is known today. And so they, you know, they can see them coming from afar. And so, you know, they describe them as the black-footed ones, the Melampodes. That's that M-E-L-A word again. Podes is just a Greek word for foot, for feet. So the Melampodes translated means the black-footed ones. And the reason why they get described is because they're wearing these long white, you know, garments. You know, exquisitely dressed, you know, in linen, and they made linen garments and stuff like you see in these expensive, you know, malls and stuff. People buying linen, you know, wear it for the summer, you know. But they were called the black-footed ones. Now that was their cousins. So there's droves of descriptions of blacks, you know, in Greece, that they were there first, that they established these colonies throughout the Greek islands and stuff. You know, they're the ones who started these cities, you know, Athena is a carbon copy of one of the so-called Egyptian goddesses, you know, who's black, you know, so they were worshiping a black goddess, many of them, you know, Hercules, Apollo, and Zeus, and all their ancestors go back, you know, to, someone named Apeops. Apeops had been given a name. You know, he was the black. You know, Egyptus and Danaus were brothers. And these were the Danaus that were related to the 50 sons. Egyptus ruled, and he had a son. And his son was passed down the rulership of Arabia. You know, and all these black civilizations, the ancient black civilizations of Arabia. In Arabia, the ancient inscriptions that they found, come to find that these ancient inscriptions is referred to in the category of Semitic. You know, and so this is what the part where these so-called Semitic scholars, this is what they stay away from. You know, they say Semitic, you know, the Semites, and as far as it goes. But it's very easy to grab hold of. It's not hard. It's not difficult. The anthropology forces them to render whether or not these were Caucasians, Europeans, or non-whites, you know, Ethiopian looking like people. You know, all black people are not progress. And all black people are non-prophets, are not non-prophets, you see. And so to give you an idea of what some of these ancient black nations look like, you can turn to the country of Ethiopia and see the different morphological features, the different head textures of the people that spread in Asia and what they refer to as Europe. And that is why they mention these stories and shit. There's a Negro scholar. I use that word. Negro scholars and black scholars are not necessarily the same. But, and I get this from some of the elders. You know, some would say that he was a black scholar. His name was Frank Snowden, Jr. He wrote a book called Blacks in Antiquity. And it's an extraordinary book. You know, the Greeks had designed these beautiful, you know, vases. You know, big, huge, you know, vases, like maybe like three feet tall, big, huge vases. And they portrayed a lot of, you know, the stories on these vases. And one of the sculptors or designers, he captured Memnon in one of the scenes. And if you look at the scene real close, you see that he gave Memnon African features, you know, on these vases. It's a number of them that they found. And they had this particular type of thing for hair texture. So when they were talking, when they were, they created this, you have to see it. You know, just, it'll remind you of like the cornrows. You know, some of the hairstyles that brothers and sisters have today are not new. You know, it's cornrows that they use to depict their hair texture. Short dreads, you know, when you start off growing dreadlocks, you know, your hair is short for a while or whatever, when they finish, you know, doing it, so your hair can start extending and growing out. Well, they, all throughout, you know, what they refer to as the Greek islands, Europe, Southern Europe, Central, they found these vases, these water jars and whatnot, and, black people with full lips and wide noses, you know, they were turning up all over the place. You know, these are the descendants of the black people who were there. They would have you believe that these were slaves. They were descendants of slaves. That's been one of the most common things to use to explain, to take the significance away. You know, in other words, oh, yeah, you're right. You know, they're indigenous people. Yeah, they were black, but they were primitive. Yeah, they were dark skinned, but they were, you know, they was savages. You know, that they didn't build anything. You know, it only came about these monuments here weren't built by them because they weren't knowledgeable enough. They didn't have, you know, like they do on this History Channel shit with ancient aliens. That is the new racism. That is a new strategic clandestine way to continue to strip black people of their ancient past, in particularly Kemet, what is referred to today as Egypt. And that word Egypt, as a matter of fact, the Greeks had, they were all, they had a habit of corrupting terms and words from Kemet in their speech pattern. For some reason, when they would pronounce some of these names and terms, something about their this thing, you know, that, you know, your speech, you know, from, you know, your tongue, your learning, it's all these different things and whatnot. And so there's this habit, like, you know, they couldn't stop, so to speak, at the ending letter. For some reason, it went past, and it always appeared to sound like an S. So this is why a lot of this is why a lot of Greek names, you know, ending S's, you know. And when they were trying to say some of the ancient Kemetic names of the so-called gods and goddesses, that's why you see a lot of those names are spelled that they use today. Set, is Isis, you know. Asur or Asur is Osiris, you know. Horu is Horus. You see, Nebhet is Nephet. So they couldn't, you know, the speech pattern. You know. So they had a habit of doing that, and they would corrupt some of the names. So it was a phrase that they used in Kemet for one of the names of God. And the Ka of God, you know, which when he made the first man, he put a Ka in the first man too. And this man, that once this Ka was placed inside of his, it was an actual twin. And so his Ka was placed, he came to life. What does that sound like? You know, God breathing, you know, the breath of life in Adam, and Adam comes in, he comes to animation. It's the same story, you know. And so there was a place in what would be sort of like what's northern Kemet, what have you. The Greeks also knew it as Memphis. And today this is why you have this city of Memphis in Tennessee, right? There's a Memphis, I believe, in Greece, right? So they were all renaming shit, right? They were renaming shit. So this place was said to be one of the original places where God had begun, you know, the first mound, the first creation. And it was a place, something like Hut-Ka-Ptah. And the Greeks took those three words, and Ptah is a name, so to speak, and they fused them together, and it became Agyptos. And then Agyptos became Egypt, by more slicing off other words on it, other letters on it. So that's how you got Egypt today. But they spoke of an Egyptos who was black, and his brother went off and ruled what is today Syria, Palestine, Jordan, Lebanon, and these places like that. And he had a son, and they had sons, and they had sons, and so on and so forth. Legacy of dynasties, you know, throughout Western Asia, right? So, like I said, that's Europe, and you can check and go through the Greek myths, and you can see it's a lot of research. There's a lot of stuff that's there. We have to be able to dig this shit up on our own. Can't expect the Europeans to do it. We'd be out of our minds to believe that the Europeans are somehow is going to do it in general. Yeah, every now and again one comes along, you know, gets accused of being a nigger lover and whatnot. Some of them actually have black wives or have, you know, dated black women and, you know, call themselves Africans, you know, went there and they're, you know, the fourth generation whites. you know, and he ended up with black women and whatnot. It was one white guy. You know, we give him credit. We give him credit because he's a pain in the ass to the usual orthodox Egyptologists who want to control ancient Egyptian chronology and history and who the pharaohs was and all that kind of stuff. So he's just a pain in the ass. And he's digging up things. He's exploring other regions. And he's contradicting them. So they hate him pretty much, you know. They try to, you know, take his work off his beast. These words like French scholarship, pseudo scholar, all these terms, you know, to play on your mind, to play on your mind. If you want to, and you would dedicate it, you do not necessarily need an Egyptological degree to study Kemet. You know, they didn't have them when they began. Somebody had to start the shit off, so they weren't. You know, they had to begin to call themselves that. You know, but like I said, that's Europe, and you know, want to get into Western Asia. Oh, before that, let me say this right quick too. Might as well. I mentioned Rome being the bastard child of Greece, and how Western Europe, the Great Britain or British Empire, France is the bastard child of Rome, and America is the bastard child of the British. The French, you know. So the Roman civilization, there were people there before the Romans, and they place them in these stories. And the Romans themselves admit this. And so there's another mysterious people referred to as the Etruscans, from a place called there was a place called Tuscany. Right, but it's this mysterious people. Now they practice a particular type of culture that was told, you know, pretty much. I was going to say totally, but juxtaposed to the usual Greek Roman culture, a patriarchy, which has been the hallmark of white society, which is. You know, the cause and effect and the contradiction became white feminism due to white male patriarchal rule. And so that became the contradiction. And this is the struggle today. And we're told today that women have made incredible progress. There's been these movies lately that have made it's a movie network on cable. Lifetime Movie Network. And if you look and you see these movies, and you know, what you see now is an array of movies being produced now, where the movies are pro-women. You know, the women are fighting back. You know, the rapist, the possible burglar, the attacker, whatnot, the lying, cheating, double-dealing husband who was a murder on another side of the life and all kind of shit. And so you see these movies, the women are kicking ass, you know, they're fighting back, they're busting them over the head, you know, hitting them with a little karate and whatnot before the police get there. And by the time the pig get there, all he got to do is just handcuff the beat up motherfucker on the ground. He all broken up, beat up, got to be taken to the hospital, whatnot, you know. So these movies, you know, and that's the contradiction. That is the result of white male patriarchal rule. See, so the Romans were preceded by the Etruscans, and the Etruscans had a particular culture that placed them, that set them apart from the Romans, you know, and so, but they've been a mystery, you know, and this is the forerunner of what you've been taught in school about Julius Caesar and Augustus Caesar, you know, who they hijacked the calendar, you know, and named these months after themselves and chopped off some of the days and whatnot, all this kind of shit. You know, this is where some of the, you know, Julius and Augustus, these 3 months that are lined up right behind each other in summertime, you know. But that's some other lesser known history that preceding the Romans. Now, the whole Roman astronomy pathology. It's carbon copy of Kent. Carbon copy of the black people in Asia and in Kent. Carbon copy. You know, they have these terminology, these words. The game show, Wheel of Fortune, Fortuna. Fortuna was a goddess, right? And if you, you know, gave offerings, or if you invoke Fortuna, then your fortunes would change. You know, you would have good luck as opposed to bad omens and bad energy and bad whatnot. Well, Fortuna is a carbon copy of the ancient Kemetic female god head of good fortune. Her name escapes me. But they copied Fortuna from Kemet. And this is in the beginning of, like, when they talk about the man and his fortune. This is where they get fortune telling. You know, you, some of us have been in these places in New Orleans that have the French Quarter. You go down, you see women, you know, sitting in the round, what's referred to the Jackson Brewery and whatnot. You know, you see them sitting there with it, and they're there, you know, to read your poems and whatnot. This is where that comes from. And so the Romans named her Fortuna, and that's how they got the name, the game, Wheel of Fortune. So you spin the Wheel of Fortune to see could you make a fortune. So the Romans copied the word luna, lunatic, you know, the reference to the moon. The moon is seen as a feminine aspect. The sun is seen as a masculine aspect, a solar aspect, the lunar aspect. So due to the patriarchal, due to the male chauvinism shown toward the women in Rome and in Greece and Rome, when something transpired that was evil or some type of whatnot or some omen, they blamed it on the woman. The woman had began to take the rap. And so the moon luna, they had this thing about the moon and the night and whatnot, you know, the howling wolf, you know, and whatnot, right? So these omens that would arise. And so since it was the moon, then it was the woman, then the woman was, you know, the woman became evil. She became the witch, you know. Later on, she became the bitch. You know, the four-legged animal, she became the bitch and whatnot. And all these different terms that they have now that refer to women, you know, in pornography, in street, in white slang, you know, and whatnot. You know, these very derogatory terms. But this is where the word lunatic come from. Luna is the name of the female goddess, right? And so they copied that from Kemet, where, you know, such goddesses as Isis and a whole array of them, an array of these so-called goddesses are just one, these are many attributes of the one feminine aspect, you know, the feminine half or form of humanity. You see what I'm saying? And so they copied that, you know, and due to, like I said, the white male patriarchal rule, you know, the way women were treated and grown in Greece and Rome. Now, they'll try to tell you, well, it wasn't that bad. But, you know, that, like I said, Europeans are always trying to, you know, clean things up when they need to, or they try to rewrite history or reform or to reshape or to refeed it, you know, feed it back, regurgitate it back to you in some kind of way, you know. But that's been their history. That's been their relationship. The position of women in Rome and Greece. But this is where this modern psychology come from now, where, you know, this I've heard, you know, I remember hearing this, where the husband or whatever, these jokes that they would tell, these stories, or, you know, the woman being chained to the stove, you know, these sexual jokes, you know, that are directed toward women. This is a historical legacy. This is a historical legacy, a white male patriarchal rule. You know, in Africa, the opposite. You know, in ancient Kemet, there were female priests. You know, some of them would say female priestesses. You know, you put that other S on, you know, princess, prince, you know, sort of thing. There's never been a female pope. And it probably won't ever be one. and they struggled during those times. To now, they did have certain female, like, sort of society, but these mysteries, this goes back to Kemet, mysterious vices, you know, so they copied as a mystery, the Lucinian mystery, you know, the female, the Pistis Sophia, Sophia, the Greek goddess Sophia. The Greek goddess Sophia is a word, it's an ancient African word named Soba, S-O-B-A, or Zoba, Zoba. This is a word, the equivalent of what we say today as master teacher, scholar, learned one, intelligent one, teacher who taught in the temple in ancient Kemet. So they took the word Soba and developed their female form of it and gave the name Sophia. This is where the word Sophia comes from ancient Kemet. So they copied that. So Sophia was the original black goddess from Safet, who was the wife of what the Greeks referred to as Stoke, you know, god of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. And you find this same black ancient Kemetic goddess in the Bible, you know. Let's see which book it is. We got him in the left, but we're gonna continue this. It's been a honor, you know, to do this, you know, to teach our people, to take a walk back in black history, ancient style, you know, so we can know who we are, where we come from. That those of us who've done, you know, the homework, we've learned and we've studied and we've, you know, we've taken the time to try to teach our people. But we have to do this, you know, by hook or crook, you know, the best way we know how, whatever form of communication leader that we have, you know. So, you know, stay tuned, you know, to next week, and we're going to keep going, you know, and get the, you know, the full picture. And we'll take you from